It's not that we are perfect, but if we get perfect knowledge from the perfect person, then our knowledge is perfect, and that we can give to others. I may have so many imperfections, but if I take perfect knowledge from the perfect person and give that to someone else, they also, if I take that knowledge from the perfect person, then I become perfect. That knowledge is perfect, and I should give that knowledge to others. In this way, we please Krishna, and Krishna promises that someone who does that, they're guaranteed to get pure love of Krishna, pure devotional service. So it's not bad. Then what's so wonderful about pure devotional service? Anyone know the six characteristics? We haven't got that far in the Nectar of Devotion, but some of you may remember the six things, or some of the six things about pure devotional service that make it so particularly special.
Is it because it's not tinged with karma or jnana?
Yes, it's free from all kinds of fruitive desire, for desire for sense gratification or philosophical speculation. Okay, another thing, is very rarely achieved in this world. Krishna confirms this. Manushyanam sahasrishu kaschit yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschit vetimam tatvata. Krishna says, out of many, many thousands of men, one may endeavor for perfection. And out of all those who've actually achieved perfection, Krishna says, hardly one knows me in truth. So one of the other items is that pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness. We want some auspicious result. We want some blessing. We want some benediction that will make our lives all right and very good. And pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness. It's very rarely achieved. It's the only means to attract Krishna. Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita. He explains that bhaktya mam abhijanati. I can be known as I am, Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service. Pure devotional service, not only it's the only means to attract Krishna, he also explains it in the 11th chapter, when after having shown Arjuna his universal form, and revealed again his beautiful four-armed and then his two-armed original form, then he says that only by undivided devotional service can you know me as I am, Arjuna, standing before you. So, not only that, but pure devotional service is so transcendentally powerful that it controls even Krishna. Krishna becomes conquered by the love of his devotee. So pure devotional service is exceptionally powerful. And this is what Krishna is asking us to try to understand when he gives us Bhagavad Gita. He's asking us to understand that our real business is to surrender unto him and love him. Actually. Is it very difficult? Just we have to learn the science. Just like if you want to do some something which may appear a little difficult, if you want to build a space rocket, it's not that difficult. Then you have to know the scientific principle with which you're going to do it. If you want to do some complicated mathematical equation, you have to know the science of doing it. If you want to keep somebody's books, we have a few accountants in the room, then you have to learn the science of accountancy if you want to do it right. Yes? If you want to mend a vehicle, you have to know the science of how it works. It's practical. Otherwise, what will you do? You'll open the bonnet and you think, goodness me, where am I going to start? The smoke coming out, what do I do? But if you know the science, you can deal with it. And similarly, the most important science is the science of Krishna. And if you're going to know the science, if you're going to know the medical science, if you're going to take out somebody's tonsils, you know, you take the long scissors and put them down somebody's throat and haul them out. You ever had your tonsils out? Fortunately, this never happened to me. But if you're going to have that happen, you want to make sure that the person who's doing it knows the science properly Otherwise, someone comes up with a big pair of scissors and says, yeah, come on, I'll take your tonsils out. Will you agree? You want to be sure that they're a qualified scientist. They know the medical science. Otherwise, get lost. Go away. I don't want you near me with those scissors. So similarly, the spiritual science is the most important science because it's the science of the soul. It's the science of what happens to us during this life and what happens to us at the end of this life, where we're actually going and how to actually perfect our lives even while in this temporary material body. So it's, Krishna says, this supreme science of the self was explained by me to Vivashvan some 120 million years prior to Krishna speaking it to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And he explains how the science was learned. It was heard very carefully. It was understood through disciplic succession. So all those kings who heard this science, when Vivashvan, he heard it from Krishna. Krishna was giving transcendental knowledge. He was speaking transcendental knowledge to Vivashvan. Vivashvan understood that transcendental knowledge. He became fully situated in perfect transcendental knowledge. He also became on the transcendental platform of life. Transcendental platform means the platform of service to Krishna, because it's not just a theoretical thing. Transcendental knowledge doesn't mean that we just understand the soul. Transcendental knowledge is important because once you've got it, then you have to know, well, what do I do with it? You know? If you've got gold, what do you do with it? Do you hoard it? Or do you spend it? You use it. So that knowledge, the most important, the most valuable asset we can get is transcendental knowledge. And the knowledge itself explains how to use it. How to use it means everything belongs to Krishna. Everything's meant to be used in the service of Krishna. This is the transcendental platform of activity. So when I use everything for Krishna, and we're going to see more about that in this verse, that everything's come from Krishna. Krishna says the entire spiritual world has come from him. The entire material world has come from him. And the jivas, the marginal energy, who are on the margin, they can either be in the spiritual world or the material world. They've also come from Krishna. They also belong to Krishna. And the material bodies which we've got, which have got different senses in them, also belong to Krishna. They've been produced by Krishna's energy. So the body belongs to Krishna, the soul belongs to Krishna. Everything is meant to be used in the service of Krishna. So the body means the senses. We've all got senses. If you've got a body, if someone is senseless, that's not a very good position to be in. But if they have senses, then we use our senses. We can taste, we can smell, we can think, we can feel, we can understand, we can touch. So many things. But if we're senseless, then we're like a stone. Yes? So we all have senses. These senses also belong to Krishna. They're also meant to be used for the proprietor. Okay, so any questions or comments on what we've discussed so far?
Is distress and happiness belonging is part of Krishna as well?
Distress and happiness, they're all generated by Krishna through his inferior energy. In this world we experience distress and happiness. But that distress and happiness comes when we don't cooperate with Krishna. For example, let's take that the normal healthy condition of the citizens is to live peacefully in the kingdom, yeah? But yet you've got some people who are prisoners and they're in a distressed condition. They're suffering in the prison. They're forced to do so many things that they don't really want to do. Their freedom is curtailed. This is a distressing condition. Mm. So this distressing condition comes when we forget that we're not independent of Krishna. We forget that we're dependent on Krishna. And when we don't cooperate with the laws of the state, this is called being a rascal. So similarly, being irreligious means we don't cooperate with Krishna's laws, where he tells us you do like this, you do like this, you do like that, and you become happy. Religion basically means you follow the laws given by Krishna, and Krishna's explained in the Bhagavad Gita that those religious principles are there for us to work with, to cooperate with, and to live happily in this world. Of course, you can be leading a nice life in the prison where you're gradually getting better. You're gradually improving yourself so that when you're released, you don't come back in. The idea is not to re-offend. So if we offend Krishna, if we're offensive to Krishna, we have terms within this prison house of the material world. And we take the prison house conditions. What are the conditions of the material world? Four basic conditions of the material world which we have to live with?
Ignorance.
Yeah, that's the basic. That's why we have to keep doing it. But what are the four? What are these four walls of the prison of the material world?
Birth, death, old age, disease.
Yeah, birth, death, old age, and disease. Four very strong, insurmountable walls. Not like what's that big prison they have in America? That one where nobody ever escapes from, Alcatraz. But these walls are really tough. There's no getting out of birth, death, old age, and disease in the material world. But if you go straight, then you can be released. If you become an honest person, but as long as we maintain the criminal mentality, then you can get out, and then again, come back in. And as long as we keep that criminal mentality, we'll be released at the end from all the struggle. But nobody even wants to be released from the struggle. Who wants to die? It's such a miserable condition. And we get attached to the prison. Question is that? Krishna helps people, yes, in so many ways. Krishna gives us our bodies. Krishna gives us our food. Just like in the Christian idea, then we know that he gives us our daily bread. Yes. If Krishna doesn't feed us, then what will we have? What will be there if Krishna doesn't send the rains to grow the food? Don't believe the advertisements, it doesn't all come from Tesco. It grows in the ground. The food grains grow because Krishna sends the grains and the food grows, and that's how you get your Weetabix and everything else. Only because Krishna actually sends it. Other people, they have the job of distributing it, but Krishna actually sends the grains. So that food is there. Just like your father, he provides food for you. Krishna, he's the Supreme Father. He provides food for all living beings in all species of life. So Krishna helps everyone. And if we want to understand him, if we want to get out of the material world, he'll help us do that also. And if we want to stay in the material world, he'll help us do that too. But he speaks Bhagavad Gita so that we get some intelligence, that we won't want to stay in the material world, we want to get out and go back home. Is that okay? Alright, thank you. Nice question.
When you said criminal mentality,
yes,
just a moment ago, yeah, well, I know what you mean by having birth, death, disease and old age, that's like four walls of our living prison in the material world, but what do you mean by criminal mentality?
Okay, well, criminal mentality is a very simple thing. Criminal mentality means I'm not going to follow the laws of the state. I'm going to be a thief, a mugger, a murderer, an arsonist, or whatever I want to do which causes distress to others. Because Krishna is not into causing pain to other living entities. Krishna wants, the state wants, that everyone lives together peacefully without infringing and encroaching on other people's rights and liberties. Yes? But if you decide, I don't care for the laws, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to make the laws. Immediately you're criminal. And that criminal mentality, that criminal thinking, means that we'll break the laws of the state, and then we'll be punished. So when we break the laws of Krishna, then we become punishable. So there are three other things. There's a trident. If you imagine a trident's got three prongs. Yeah? If someone prods you with a nice sharp trident, it's going to hurt. So there are three pronged miseries in this material world.
Lust, greed, and anger.
Hmm?
Lust, greed, and anger.
Well, those are other things which are coming to get us as well, because those also hurt like anything. And the reaction of, that's like the reaction of putting your hands in the fire. It hurts, you know, it burns. And lust, greed, and anger, they cause a very unpleasant experience. But these things, they come within the category of three types of miseries, which everyone in this world has to experience. Mukesh Prabhu?
Is it Adivoti, Adiyatmi, Adideva?
Yes, please explain.
I think Adiyatmik is where you get miseries of your own mind.
And your body.
And your body.
Yes.
And then you have the Adivotic, which is other living entities giving.
Yes, the antagonistic activities of other living beings. Anyone ever been antagonized by another living being? Mosquitoes, wasps, worms, whatever, diseases. Okay.
And the other miseries is where the devas can actually put miseries on
this. Yeah. Anyone ever been too hot, too cold, too wet, too thirsty? So many miseries, earthquakes, hurricanes, so many miseries, droughts. Miseries generated most obviously by the superior powers who run the universe, the demigods. So these three miseries are there. We have the miseries of our own minds. The miseries of our own minds come in two very nice forms. One is hankering, and the other is lamenting. We hanker. I want this. If only I had this, then I'd be happy. If only I could do this, I'd be happy. If only I could be like this, I'd be happy. And lamenting. Oh, if only I hadn't lost that. The lamenting is there, that I wanted to have something and it couldn't happen. Everything didn't work out the way I wanted. So much hankering and lamenting. So the miseries of the mind are always there, causing so much disturbance, actually. If you ever take a look, try one time just standing back on the high street and just watching all the people's faces as they go by. It's said that the face is the index of the mind. And just look and see what's going through people's minds. You'll soon get the idea. Oh, so many experiences are there.
Especially at Christmas.
Yes. At Christmas, during Christmas, what about after Christmas? It's all distressing. And miseries of our own bodies. Miseries inflicted by our own bodies. The diseases that we get. Yeah. We eat too much. Yeah, it's painful. You go to India and you catch some deli belly. You don't have to go to India, you can go to any restaurant. And anyway, so many diseases are there of the body, so many miseries of the body. The body stops working, you get arthritis. The body even gets old. These are miseries of the body. And the bodies also, even of our loved ones, they disappear, they die. So all these miseries are going on. Our own bodies, they're dying. Two classics. Anyone ever had toothache?
What now?
Oh dear. So it's a miserable condition. And when it gets really bad, it's almost as bad as what ladies sometimes get. Labor pains. Yeah, that's really miserable. But this material world is so tricky that even though when the ladies have children, they sometimes think, they curse their husbands and say, why did you do this to me? And they say, I'm never going to do it again. Hey, and the next thing you know, oh yeah, I'm having another baby. Huh. To see how the material world is so tricky. And we keep being in the situation of the material world. And we keep thinking that actually we're enjoying here, where all the time we're being kicked by material nature. So many miseries. Anyway, these are all here. So this criminal mentality means that we transgress the laws given by Krishna and we suffer the influence of this material world. And Krishna explains in great depth what's happening in this material world. He explains in Bhagavad Gita what actually starts the whole miserable process. Anyone remember how it starts? Somebody said lust. Anyone remember?
It's envy, is it?
Yeah, actually there are six of those. Gosh, there's a whole football team. All the opposing elements. There's lust, anger, greed, envy, madness, illusion. Yeah. All these opposing players. All ready to give us trouble. But Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita how it starts. That it starts with
while contemplating the sense objects.
Yes. Would you like to explain for us? Point us in the direction of the verse. Who knows the verse?
Nityananda Prabhu.
What is it? Two
of the senses. One becomes attached.
Do you know what
when contemplating the object of sense is one, the mind being attached to it, you know. The mind being attached to it, you know.
And then lust develops.
Yeah, and from the attachment, you know,
lust develops.
And when lust is not fulfilled, you know, anger develops, you know. And when anger develops, you know, you lose your memory as well, you know.
And you
become
bewildered.
151.
And then you...
151. Okay, let's have a look.
262.
This is a very interesting verse. This is when Krishna's, before he starts, he's summarizing the contents of the Bhagavad Gita. First of all, he's going to tell Arjuna, this is what I'm going to tell you. And then he tells him, and at the end he summarizes, this is what I told you. Now what you're going to do about it. But here, he's preliminary, summing it up. This is how it works. This is a very interesting point, these couple of verses here. How it works, that we again and again fall down into the material pool. Rupa, would you like to read us text 62 on page 151, please? Nice and slowly, so we can actually dwell on what's the process of what's going wrong. Because Krishna's explaining in these two verses how we get in a serious mess.
Should I start with translation?
Yes, just a translation, please.
By contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment lust develops, and from lust anger arises.
Okay, so it starts when we look at the objects of the senses. What do we mean when we say the objects of the senses? Anyone?
Eyes, ears.
Hmm?
You want something.
Sorry?
The objects in the body. Objects.
Whatever's going to please the senses, i.e. the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth, and obviously to touch.
Yes.
So if something's like really shining or something really, you know, kind of alluring and kind of getting, calling you almost,
yes,
and you actually give in to that and say, oh, something's shining there, yeah, let me check it out, and you go to touch it and it's a broken piece of glass and you get cut.
Okay, but let's take the simple principle. Let's take... Just think for a moment on a really delicious bowl of gulab jamuns. So the tongue starts watering already as we contemplate. That sounds really good. So this is what happens. The mind starts thinking about, those gulab jamuns sound really good. They seem excellent. And what happens, here Krishna explains, we become attached to them. The senses are there, the sense of taste, the tongue, because there are five senses. There's the tongue, the ears. The ears, they want to hear some nice sound. Oh yes, let me hear that wonderful Bollywood music, or whatever it is. Or let me hear the cricket score, or whatever it may be. Whatever our own particular senses are attracted to. Yeah? Because everyone's got different senses. One man's food is another man's poison. and we all get different senses, the body means that you've got your own particular set of senses. So the eyes, for example, the eyes may want to see a beautiful girl or a beautiful boy. In this way, the senses become attracted and the mind dwells on this. And I think it was Walt Disney who put it this way, he said that we become pixelated. become bewildered by this. We've developed so much attachment for these things. Okay, and from that attachment, Krishna says, lust starts to develop, that I must enjoy it. Yeah, you get the gulab jamuns, the nice beautiful bowl of gulab jamuns, and we develop the lust, I've got to have them. And then Vamsi walks in the room and says, oh, that's nice, I'm taking those. We've developed attachment, we've developed lust for them. And because he's walked off with all these nice gulab jamuns, we start thinking, how dare he? He's taken away all those gulab jamuns, I wanted to eat them. And we start to become angry because that lust that's developed inside us to enjoy them becomes frustrated. So anger starts to develop. And if we say, Vamsi, I really wanted to eat those, you know, this is not right. This is aparad. You're taking away the gulab jamuns that are meant for me to enjoy. So we become angry and we start shouting and becoming really upset and throwing things and whatever, hurling the pair of cartels after him. And we become angry and we lose it. You know, we lose our memory of sane life, actually. This is going on. So here, let's see, Krishna says from attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. So let's have the next verse. Dean Prabhu, could you read the next bit, please? 663.
From anger, complete delusion arises. From delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool.
So this is the next thing. We become angry. Right? Don't forget, this has all started, Krishna's explained, just by contemplating the sense objects. That's where it begins. So what's happened? We become angry. We lose it. We become deluded. Actually, we lose all sense of propriety, what's right and what's wrong. And from delusion, we become bewildered. We forget that actually, wait a minute, Vamsi is a nice devotee. I'm supposed to be a civilized human being. Why am I behaving like an animal in this way? Yes? We lose our memory. And when the memory is bewildered, our intelligence is lost. This is what it means when we say we've lost it. We've lost what? We've lost our intelligence. How to act, how to behave properly, how to act like a human being, actually. And when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool of total ignorance and forgetfulness and misunderstanding that I'm an eternal spirit soul. How's the spirit soul, who's a tiny jiva within the body, going to eat those gulab jamuns anyway? And were the gulab jamuns even offered to Krishna? So these things, we lose all our good sense. So these are all important points to understand how we're actually suffering in this world. So anyway, let's turn to today's text, which is chapter 1, text 15, and get an idea of what's happening. We're going back live now to the battlefield of Kurukshetra, where the conch shells are being blown, and we read that on the two sides, on page 46, we saw that on the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. So let's do the Sanskrit. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Paundram Dadmo Maharsankham.
Paundram Dadmo Maharsankham.
Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha.
Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Paundram Dadmo Mahashankham.
Paundram Dadmo Mahashankham.
Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha.
Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Paundram Dadmo Mahashankham.
Paundram Dadmo Mahashankham.
Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha.
Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Paundram Dadmo Mahasankham.
Paundram Dadmo Mahasankham.
Bhima Karma Vrikodara.
Bhima Karma Vrikodara.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Paundram Dadmo Mahasankham.
Paundram Dadmo Mahasankham.
Bhima Karma Vrikodara.
Bhima Karma Vrikodara.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Paundram Dadmo Mahasankham.
Paundram Dadmo Mahasankham. Bhima Karma Vrikodara. Any ladies like to join?
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Paundram
Dadmo.
Dadmo.
Dadmo Mahashankam.
Paundram Dadmo Mahashankam. Bhima Karma Vrikodara.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Panchajanyam Hrishikesho.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Devadattam Dhananjaya.
Paundram Mahasankham.
Paundram Dadmo Mahasankham.
Bhima Karma Vrikodara.
Bhima Karma Vrikodara. Panchajanyam.
Panchajanyam.
The conch shell named Panchajanya.
The conch shell named Panchajanya.
Hrishika Isha.
Hrishika Isha.
Hrishikesh.
Hrishikesh.
Krishna.
Krishna.
The Lord who directs the senses of the devotees.
The Lord who directs the senses of the devotees.
Devadattam.
Devadattam.
The conch shell named Devadatta.
The conch shell named Devadatta.
Dhananjaya.
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 Arjuna.
Arjuna.
The winner of wealth.
The winner of wealth.
Paundram.
Paundram.
The conch named Paundra.
The conch named Paundra.
Dadmo.
Dadmo.
Blue.
Blue.
Mahashankam.
Mahashankam.
The terrific conch shell.
The terrific conch shell.
Bhima Karma.
Bhima Karma.
One who performs Herculean tasks.
One who performs Herculean tasks.
Vrika Udara.
Vrika Udara.
The voracious eater.
The voracious eater.
Bhima.
Bhima.
Translation. Lord Krishna blew his conch shell called Panchajanya. Arjuna blew his, the Devadatta. And Bhima, the voracious eater and performer of Herculean tasks, blew his terrific conch shell called Paundra. So please repeat. Lord Krishna blew his conch shell.
Lord Krishna blew his conch shell.
Called Panchajanya.
Called Panchajanya.
Arjuna blew his, the Devadatta.
Arjuna blew his, the Devadatta.
And Bhima, the voracious eater.
And Bhima, the voracious eater.
And performer of Herculean tasks.
And performer of Herculean tasks.
Blew his terrific concha.
Blew his terrific concha.
Called Pondra.
Called Pondra.
Okay. Ashok Prabhu, would you like to read us the first paragraph, please?
Of the purport.
Yeah, the
purport, yeah. Purport. Lord Krishna is referred to as Rishikesha in this verse because he is the owner of all senses. The living entities are part and parcels of him, and therefore the senses of the living entities are also part and parcels of his senses. The impersonalist cannot account for the senses of the living entities, and therefore they are always anxious to describe all living entities as senseless or impersonal. The Lord, situated in the hearts of all living entities, directs their senses. But he directs in terms of the surrender of the living entity. And in the case of a pure devotee, he directly controls the senses. Here on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Lord directly controls the transcendental senses of Arjuna. And thus his particular name of Rishikesha. The Lord has different names according to his different activities. For example, his name is Madhusudana because he killed the demon of the name Madhu. His name is Govinda because he gives pleasure to the cows and to the senses. His name is Vasudev because he appeared as the son of Vasudev. His name is Devaki Nandan because he accepted Devaki as his mother. His name is Yashoda Nandan because he awarded his childhood pastimes to Yashoda at Vrindavan. His name is Partha Sarathi because he worked as a charioteer of his friend Arjuna. Similarly, his name is Rishikesha because he gave direction to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra.
So, Sanjay Prabhu, could you read the second paragraph, please?
Arjuna is referred to as Dhananjaya in this verse because he helped his elder brother in fetching the wealth when it was required by the king to make expenditure for different sacrifice. Similarly, Bhima is known as Vakodara because he could eat as voraciously as he could perform Herculean tasks, such as killing the demons Hidimba. So the particular types of conch blown by the different personality on the side of the Pandavas, beginning with the lords, were all very encouraging to the fighting soldiers. On the other side, there were no such credits, nor the presence of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Director, nor that of the Goddess of Fortune. So they were predestined to lose the battle. And that was the message announced by the sound of the concha.
Thank you. So there's some very interesting points. When Prabhupada was lecturing on this verse in London in July 1973, when Bhaktivedanta Manor was first opened, we're fortunate that we do actually have those recordings of Prabhupada's lectures, and he drew attention to a few very salient points. The first point he made is that the principle of being a voracious eater is very nice, but the idea is if we eat a lot, we should do a lot of service too. That's the thing. So we should learn that the idea is like an elephant. The elephant eats huge amounts of food, so many kilos every day, more than we can even imagine. But he does massive amounts of work too. So Bhima, he was very, very powerful, and he had this incredible burning appetite that made it very difficult, for example, for him to observe Ekadashis. But in any case, he was very, very strong, and he could do things that the others couldn't dream of doing. So, for example, when Kunti Devi and the others were escaping from the burning house of Lak, Bhima carried them off. Actually, very strong guy. Can you imagine carrying your four brothers and your mother all at the same time and getting them out of a very difficult situation? So anyway, Bhima was very, very strong. But that was nothing, because his strength was so powerful that this demon, Hidimba, actually he killed him. And was his, the demon's sister's name was Hidimbi?
Yeah, Hidimbi and Gajakacharya.
Right. So Hidimbi, she was a demoness. But we see also a nice example from this, that the culture was very nice, that the principle was whenever there was when a Kshatriya was there, if he was approached by some lady that to be married, then he had to accept, actually. That was the Kshatriya principle. And when Hidimbi decided she wanted to marry Bhima, Bhima said, I can't marry her, she's a demoness, you know, I'm going to marry her. But she complained to Yudhisthira Maharaj, and Yudhisthira forced him. He said, no, the principle is that she's approached you for marriage, so you have to marry. And so their son, Ghatotkach, he later fought on the side of the Pandavas very strongly and valiantly on the Battle of Kurukshetra also. But apart from these points, the very significant words here, Panchajanyam Hrishikesha, this Hrishikesha is very significant. We were talking earlier about Hrishikesh. Actually, we're referring indirectly, but this is the name that's used for one who is the proprietor of all the senses. We were discussing how everything belongs to Krishna. We're discussing how the spiritual energy belongs to Krishna. The material energy of which this body is made also belongs to Krishna. The senses are also provided by Krishna. They also belong to Krishna. And the souls, the jivas, they also belong to Krishna. They're all meant to be used for Krishna's service. This is why they exist. This is why we exist, in actual fact. Let's bring it back down to home. Actually, this body is given by Krishna. The senses we have are given by Krishna, and they're meant to be used in His service. So when we talk about bhakti, devotional service, hrishikena hrishikesha, this principle is that the senses are meant to be utilized in the service of the master of the senses, the proprietor of the senses. So that is Krishna. That is called bhakti, actually. Very simple definition. Really straightforward. They're meant, that is actually the platform of knowledge. That I belong to Krishna as a spirit soul. This body belongs to Krishna. It's part of His manifestation. The senses belong to Krishna. Let me use my senses in the service of Krishna. This is called Bhakti Yoga. This is how we link with Krishna. So Arjun, he was a fighting man. He wasn't chanting. But Krishna says, no, he was my devotee. Bhaktosi me priyosi me. Why? Because his senses were being engaged in the service of Krishna. Therefore Krishna says, you are very dear to me, you're my devotee. Because always he was thinking how to serve Krishna. Always he was trying to serve Krishna. Always trying to please Krishna. So here Prabhupada makes the point in the purport, because if we read Bhagavad Gita on its own, if we read the verses of Bhagavad Gita, we won't get this very nice, clear explanation that we get from Krishna's devotee to help us understand what's the real purport of this verse. It's just like a story. Okay, well, they're all blowing their conch shells. So what? But if we understand the messages that we get when we hear from Krishna's devotee, then we can understand there's some very significant points here. Prabhupada was discussing some of these points, and particularly he's explaining that everyone here has got their different names. Krishna is being addressed as Hrishikesh. He's also addressed in Bhagavad Gita as Govinda or Madhusudana. The names that one gets, previously the principle was when one got a name at birth, the idea is that one had an astrological reading and that the name was given according to the activity. All these names that are given, Dhananjaya, It's relating to the activities of the person. So Krishna, his designation here is the Hrishikesha, the Lord of the senses, the master of the senses. So Arjuna is asking Krishna, please direct my senses so that they will be properly utilized. Now, what happens is our senses are directed in different ways in this world. Generally speaking, we have this problem that the senses are directed by the mind. The mind says, yes, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to go there, I want to do that, I want to enjoy. And we become servants of the mind and the senses. And the result of that is that that sort of activity, Krishna explains, when it's done for us, when it's done for our satisfaction, what does that incur? Karma, yes. When we act with the mindset, with the view, with the intention of satisfying our own mind and senses, the demands of our own minds and senses, the result is we get karmic reaction, we get karma. What is the result of karma? Look around, we've all got bodies. We've all got material bodies. This is the result of karma. The bodies that we have now are the results of our previous sets of activities. And just as we've got these bodies as the results of our previous karma, now we're also generating, by our karmic activities, our next bodies. So who knows what they're going to be? But we can understand some simple principles that if we develop the karma of killing animals, for example, to eat meat, then the karma for that is that we're going to have a very painful multiple set of existences of being killed. Why there are so many wars? Because the result of animal killing is, of slaughtering animals, is that human beings responsible also have to be slaughtered. If not in this life, then in the next life, and in the next life, and in the next life. The Bible, if anybody's ever... who in this room has ever read much from the Bible? Anyone?
Right.
Okay, a few. So we know the saying, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. The principle of karma is there in the Bible also, yes? So the law of cause and effect, action and reaction. If you kill someone, you have to be killed. So if we are simply working for the interest of the tongue and becoming involved in so many sinful activities, what kind of situation are we in? If we're under the control of the senses, who are dictating that we do so many sinful activities for which we're going to suffer. So the point that Dean Prabhu made is that the real thing that's keeping us here is ignorance. When we're ignorant about who we are and what we are and what the principles are that govern this world, then the result is suffering. So therefore Krishna is explaining transcendental knowledge by which we can understand what we should be doing and what we should not be doing. What will actually help us to get out of the material world and what will keep us dreadfully entangled in the material world in repeated birth and death. And Krishna is also going to explain in chapter 4 what are the results of acting in knowledge. But before we go to that, let's see, we discussed about utilizing our energies to serve the senses, to serve the mind and serve the senses that are making so many demands. The result of that is karma. But the result of a different type of mentality, a different type of thinking, when we're acting with our senses, produces a very different result. Krishna explains work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, one's work binds one to this material nature. In other words, the binding effect is there from karma. Karma means we're bound to have a material body, and we're bound to have all the pleasures that come with having a material body, and all the pains that come with a material body. We're bound to the chain of repeated birth, old age, disease, and death. And birth and old age and disease and death. This is called bondage. Bondage to material existence. And that simply arises from the mentality that I am the enjoyer. But here's the nice big mistake as well. Because I'm thinking I am the enjoyer. Notice what's going on here. It means that we've discussed that I'm actually the spirit soul. But the problem is, as a spirit soul, I've taken birth in this particular material body. We understood that the soul is transcendental. He's totally different from the material body. But the big mistake is thinking that I am this material body. This is the mistake. And out of this ignorance, we act as though we are the material body. I think we've given this example before. Under the spell of illusion. Anyone seen a hypnotist on the stage or on the TV? Anyone seen a hypnotist at work? You may have seen that sometimes they take their subject and they hypnotize the subject and they put him under the spell. Okay, right, now you do this, now you do that. Now you jump along the floor like a rabbit. Okay, he's got this grown man jumping around. He thinks I'm a rabbit. Under the spell of Maya. Under the spell, an hypnotist spell, he thinks, now I'm a rabbit. And he starts just behaving like a rabbit. Yes. So the spell of Maya is such that we also take the principle of whatever body we're born into and thinking, yes, now I'm a boy, now I'm a girl, now I'm a man, now I'm a youth. Now I'm a policeman, now I'm a scientist, now I'm a rocket scientist, or whatever we may think we are. Now I'm an engineer, now I'm a student, now I'm old, now I'm diseased. Whatever it may be, all the conditions of this material world, we think, this is me, under the spell of Maya. But the trick of breaking the spell is to get knowledge, to wake up from the influence of that spell. And Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita is to break that spell so that we no longer are foolishly playing like a rabbit or playing like a human being or playing like any of these things, but actually understanding that our real occupation, when I wake up, I understand my real identity, yes? Just like in a dream, we can be doing so many things, but when we wake up, we go about our proper business. Yes? Similarly, when we're under the illusion of Maya, we're engaging in so many activities in ignorance, but when we wake up, we go about our regular activity, our normal activity. So Krishna is explaining that the normal activity of the soul is to serve Krishna, to love Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is advising in Bhagavad Gita that our real principle is to love Him. Love Him isn't just a state of mind. It is a state of mind, but it's an activity as well. Just like husband and wife. If the wife is always saying, I love you, but I'm not going to wash your socks. Or if the husband says, I love you, but I'm not going to do anything for you. That love has to be demonstrated. Does it not? It's an activity. So Krishna is asking us not just to call out His name. Just this example, I think we discussed this one also before, that if your beloved is always calling out your holy name and just singing your holy name with great love, Gaura Krishna Guru, he said, well, they'd have to do it quite a lot before I'd really believe them. But they actually just wanted to sing my holy name in great love. So we also have to convince Krishna by practical activity that we love Him. So Krishna is advising us in Bhagavad Gita how to demonstrate that we love Him and actually how to waken up our dormant love for Him. What is our natural activity? And he advises Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakta Madhyaji Mam Namaskar. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage, your obeisances to me. It's a very simple thing. Always think of Krishna. This is practical. He says specifically, engage your mind in always thinking of me. So this is yoga practice. Yoga practice means not to let the mind drag us here and there all over the material world, because that's what it's doing at the moment, actually. It's due to the influence of the mind and its desires and the senses that we got that that's how we landed up with this body. Finally, after 8,400,000 species of life. And under the influence of the mind and the senses, we're going to get another body after this one's finished. Just like the soul takes a new body, just like we take on a set of clothes, and then when they get old and worn out, we take a new set. We give that up and take a new set of clothes. Yes? So the principle is really simple. Anyone know the expression power of attorney? Have we discussed this idea before? Anyone here done any legal work? Okay, power of attorney means that you sign away responsibility for the affairs of your life to such and such a person. You sign away your, on the dotted line, that this person is responsible now for the things that happen to me. Scary. Who will you trust to see that everything that happens to you, this person is completely taking charge of where you go, what you eat, all your affairs, all your wealth, everything, all your assets, your whole life is signed away to this person. Power of attorney, we have all given power of attorney for our futures to our minds and senses. Actually. But yoga practice means, Krishna says, no, you take back control of the mind and senses. Any kind of yoga practice, doesn't matter what it is. Yoga practice means using and taking control of the mind and senses. Without controlling the mind and senses, this idea of yoga is totally a joke, actually. And back to yoga, Krishna is giving the very simple process of directly engaging our senses in the very pleasurable method, not the artificial method of trying to stop the mind and senses from working when they've got so many demands. So we see some so-called yoga of doing some yoga exercises and then going out and having a cigarette. Yeah. In other words, for a moment you control the senses and then you just let them do whatever they want to do. No, the process is to bring the mind and senses under control. Under control means they're utilized for the purpose of who they belong to. This is Hrishikesha. So Krishna is the master of the senses. We're trying to satisfy these insatiable or unsatisfiable senses, because as soon as we give them what they want, then they always want something else. What's next? So we're trying to satisfy these, but actually our senses are meant to be engaged to satisfy Krishna's senses. This is the yoga practice, actually. So back to yoga, this is what Arjuna is engaged in. Even though he's a warrior on the battlefield, Arjuna is engaged as bhaktosime priyosime. Krishna is saying, you're my devotee, you're very dear to me, because he's using his senses in Krishna's service. So this is self-realization, actually. This is the whole process. So anyone got any questions or comments on this, what we've been discussing? We'll go into this more next week, but just for now, any questions or comments on this point?
So when you mentioned Bhakti Yoga, is what we're doing right now by having congregational chanting and by attending Bhagavad Gita classes, is that class of Bhakti Yoga then?
Yes. Okay. What we're doing is we're hopefully got our minds engaged, as opposed to being on the beach somewhere, got our minds here focused on hearing and trying to understand about Krishna. We're actually approaching Krishna by demonstrating to Krishna that we want to understand him. We want to understand how it works. We want to understand who he is. We want to understand who we are. We're engaging our senses, our ears, in hearing about Krishna. Hopefully we're contemplating on Krishna. This is bhakti yoga. The same process, using the ears to hear about Krishna and using the tongue to vibrate sound about Krishna, explain about Krishna, this is kirtanam. Hearing is called shravanam. Using the tongue is called kirtanam. The idea is that the sound is not meant to go in one ear and come out of the other. Actually, the sound is meant to go in through the ears, into the heart, and then come out through the tongue. We assimilate this understanding, and then we speak, explain to others about Krishna. And we hear the sound of Krishna's name, and we chant Krishna's name, we call Krishna's name. We actually link with Krishna. It's very easy. If you want to get your friend, you give him a call. Yeah. Everybody nowadays has mobile phones. You give your friend a call. So we can call Krishna. Actually, we don't even need a telephone. It's that easy. Krishna makes it so easy. Lord Chaitanya explains that out of kindness, my dear Lord, you have made it so easy to approach you by your holy names. And in your holy names, you've invested all your transcendental potencies. And there are not even any hard and fast rules for chanting your name. And my Lord, out of kindness, you've made it so easy to approach you through your holy name. But I'm very unfortunate because I have no attraction for your holy names. So by chanting, one of the wonderful things about chanting Krishna's holy names is that we gradually get an attraction for chanting Krishna's names. We just start to do it. This is the principle, long before Nike, just do it. And you get the attraction. We just chant and we become gradually attracted. In fact, Srila Rupa Goswami, he explains that if we do it regularly, on a regular basis, he says it's actually very wonderful that just by chanting these sweet holy names every day, a natural relish awakens within the tongue for actually chanting Krishna's names. Whereas if you chant some material sound, you know, how long will you be able to keep singing that same old song before you get sick of it? But actually, as we start to chant Krishna's name more and more, then it becomes more and more tasteful. And we start, as we understand more, we hear more about the science, because the hearing has to come along with the chanting as well. The process is hearing and chanting. Chanting the name, hearing what we're chanting, and hearing and understanding the science of Krishna, so that we can appreciate more and more the value of the holy name, so we can see things in perspective and appreciate the science of chanting Krishna's names. Actually, it's a nice science, a very blissful, sublime science. And if we practice this science, we become perfect. So, yes, we're engaging in the devotional process, in bhakti yoga, just by agreeing to hear and chant. And of course, at the end, before everyone goes, we'll also... How many of us are there? 3, 6, 9, 10. Yeah, we've got enough. Okay, we'll be all right. We'll also engage the tongue in another process of devotional service, which is taking prasada. Yes, that's the best bit. So any other question or comment?
I think when you said about developing a relish for chanting the holy name, I mean, when I first started chanting on the japa beads, it was just a couple of rounds a day, but as you get better and better at it and you can hear that sound and the vibration and get faster and faster, it becomes very, very addictive.
Yes, good.
And every day you want to do more and more and more.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, very it's incredible, really.
And as we develop our taste, we want to chant better.
Yeah.
We want to improve the quality of our chanting.
That's right, yeah.
Just like the idea is with a child. A child, if it's in distress, if you're having a really tough time, then what do? You call out, Mom! Mom! You call for your mom with great eagerness and dependence. And the Shastras explain that that chanting of Krishna's holy names, when we actually start chanting with that quality, calling out Krishna, 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 actually trying to link ourselves with Krishna through the sound of his holy name, then that quality is wanted. That we're actually, just like a child, is sincerely calling out for the mother to chant Krishna's name. This is wanted. This kind of chanting is wanted. So we learn the science, we learn to chant, we learn how to chant better, and we learn to engage in the things that help us chant better, and we learn to leave aside the things that actually hinder our nice chanting of Krishna. So in this way we make nice progress. So both things have to be there, the things that help us chant better and learning also about the things that will hinder our chanting so we can get rid of those. This is the stage of anartha nivritti, getting rid of the unwanted things in the heart. And then ultimately we come to the offenseless stage of chanting Krishna's name without any offense. And the result is we get what Krishna wants to give us, is the pure offenseless chanting of the holy name, which immediately wakens up Krishna prema, love, natural love of Krishna. So it's a very wonderful process.
Well, what is offensive chanting?
Offensive chanting? Okay, well this is another topic, but there are 10 offenses in chanting the holy name. And they start, of course, with not listening attentively when we're chanting. Because if we chant inattentively, then it's a very slow process. So the first thing is when we chant, we should hear the sound of Krishna's name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And as we learn, we'll also come to understand the 10 offenses in chanting the holy name. So this is a topic which we can get into in depth at another moment in time. But if you want to see what they are, you'll find them all in the Nectar of Devotion, which is the complete science of Bhakti Yoga. Wonderful book, very powerful.
It's on Thursday, full class from 7:30 as well, you know.
Yeah.
7:30, every Thursday, you know. Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Good stuff, all right, yeah.
So all the things that will actually help us improve our devotional service and help us advance so we make nice progress in our spiritual life. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai Gaura Premanandi ki
jai.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishna Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaura Bhaktachari Nirvishesha Sarvabhauta Vasti Tathagata. Hare Krishna.
Hi, bro. You're right.
So, what we'll do now is we'll have a